Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are diving straight into the interview with Will Christensen. He is the national chair of the Independent American Party, and we'll give you some of that information. But if you don't know, check them out, the Independent American Party. And I think it's IAP.org or IndependentAmericanParty.org. I think they use a few different kind of links to this, the same domain. But the thing I got to tell you is I like this group because maybe just because they're Marines. They're no-nonsense people. They understand what has to get done. And the interesting thing is that their origins kind of stem out of the, it seems like the two waves. I didn't get into the discussion or the interview regarding the Libertarian Party, but the Libertarian Party broke away from what we call the Republican Party in 1971. And then the Constitution Party and apparently the Independent American Party both broke away in 1991. So that's kind of interesting how you can see how the disdain and how people were just absolutely upset with the Republican Party. Folks, it's not just you, and it's not just now. It has recurred, it has occurred and occurred over the history of the Republican Party. But you have to understand that the history of the Republican Party actually has a dual side to it, because the Democratic Party is a part of their history. They actually work together. There is a uniparty. And you need to, if you haven't taken the time, research on your own the uniparty. But when you look at the national RNC, the party at the national level, there is just no way you're ever going to be able to change the direction of, you know, how they're going to push and how they're aligned with the globalist movement, which is why you constantly see rhinos. There's no way they will allow you to take control of the party and the party people. So we'll be back after this interview. We're going to go straight through for 40 some minutes, and then I'll have 2 minutes to kind of wrap up at the end, and then we'll play the second segment tomorrow as the follow-up and ending interview for at least our first interview with Will Christensen. We'll be right back after this music break.
I've always looked for the best.
Okay, and, so let me do this. If you could you tell me, if you don't mind, because I don't believe in secrets, but do you believe, or actually, in 1991 when you broke away, and actually you broke away, you said, in 68, and joined the American Party. So since 68, did you vote for Nixon? It sounds like you voted for Wallace in 68. So in 72, who did you vote for? And you don't have to tell me if you don't want to, but I just, if you abstain, I completely respect that. That's okay. I'm just kind of curious, because in 91, when you created the Independent American Party, and the reason I'm just asking is because I think most people, you know, they don't understand the reason why people would actually leave the party, because they don't understand that ideology that, you know, the Republican Party is the furthest thing from the Constitution. And so they don't understand, you know, all of the evils and all of the problems. And that, and forgive me for going on, I'll let you speak, but I do not know any Republican Party that embraces the Constitution as much as Wyoming. Now, they still actually have, in Wyoming, they still follow the Republican Party line regarding the electors. In other words, the people do not choose their electors for choosing the president in Wyoming. So they equally violate the Constitution like every other state. But... that's putting that aside. As we go through the years, in 72, was there an American Party candidate that you voted for, or did you vote for Nixon?
I 72. Good grief, that's 40 years ago.
Yeah, it was.
No, 50 years ago.
I know that. McGovern, I think. I think it was McGovern was the...
No, I did not vote for Nixon.
Oh, okay.
I didn't trust Nixon.
Okay.
And so I did not vote for him. I may have voted Constitution. I may have voted American Party.
Okay.
I may have voted another third party, but I don't recall which one I did.
Okay. What about 76? Ford, Carter, or was there a different third party out there?
I was hopeful that that Carter was going to do something because he said that in his campaign, particularly about the Council on Foreign Relations and the organizations that control both major political parties.
Right, right.
But as soon as he was inaugurated, he became just like the rest of them.
Sure, sure. And what about 80?
Under control.
Okay, so in 80, did you vote for Reagan or did you vote for... I'm going to guess you did not vote for Carter again because you couldn't trust him. But did you vote for Reagan?
I remember 80 well because my... the interest on my house mortgage went through the roof.
Right.
And so I did not vote for Carter because he was in charge of that. So,
right.
I think I voted for Reagan.
Okay.
Reagan in 64 made an outstanding speech, constitutional speech. He was governor of California at that time.
Yep.
And he made an outstanding speech for Barry Goldwater just before the election. And I remembered that speech. I liked it a lot. And I'm almost positive I voted for Reagan at that point.
Okay.
And may have even voted for him second term.
Right. Okay. So then in 88, it was Bush or Mondale or a third party. Do you remember who you voted for in 88?
Third party.
Okay. That's which
Bush,
is fine.
At that time, was under control of, the head of the...
He was already a part of the deep state. My listeners already understand.
Yeah.
Bush had been a part of the deep state since the 60s. And as a matter of fact, probably even farther back.
The Politics of Heroin in Southeast Asia, which documented Bush as CIA head,
right,
destroying his competitors in Vietnam and Southeast Asia, but bringing the drugs to the United States. And so
right.
I was not a Bush fan.
Yeah, and unfortunately... Some of the details escaped the mainstream media, so I actually voted for Bush because at that point in time, I was active duty in the Marine Corps, and I didn't really see, and I didn't understand Bush and the New World Order until almost all the way through his presidency.
Yeah.
By the time we hit 1990, I was very well aware, and I was really well aware of the fact that he actually did nothing to run. You probably remember this in 92, when Bush got on this train that went out into four or five states, and that was the extent of his campaign. And in other words, he basically didn't even want to have a campaign, and... This is when, because Bush had such strong numbers, that Ross Perot came in to actually ensure that Bush wouldn't win. So Ross Perot came in, and did you remember voting for Perot in 92?
I might have.
Okay, okay.
Perot was saying some good things, but...
Yeah, I don't trust him. I didn't trust him.
He was a semi-socialist as well.
Right, right, right. Yeah, and Clinton. Well, we got what we I guess we got what we deserved. But anyway, at that point in time, the Independent American Party stood up. And what was the origins or the impetus behind the Independent American Party? Why did you guys create this party?
Oh, that's a. I felt when I left the American Party in 1990, I felt I was through with politics.
Okay.
And that was totally inaccurate. So I felt impressed that it was time to start a real third party that was would look at the candidates and support whichever one was honest and upright and constitutional. And I didn't find that in any of the third parties. And so we decided to start another one. And I read a book by former agricultural senator, Secretary Benson, that said, as an independent American, and I thought, independent American, that's kind of catchy.
Uh-huh.
And so he had there 15 points of good government, which we tracked down to a gentleman, the same one that was destroyed in the Utah House in 68. I went to see him before he died. He had died of cancer about 93, 94, somewhere around there. And I got permission to use those 15 points. Told him what we were doing. He applauded what we were doing. He was very ill at that time. And so we used the Independent American slogan, if you will, as the name, and these 15 points that this gentleman came up with. So
okay.
That's how we got the party started.
Okay.
I didn't really want to start a party, but I felt that I would not be fulfilling my mission here on the earth if I did not. And so I went ahead. And it's been a rocky road, but interesting.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, so I believe most people I talk to, they all agree that the parties are the problems. As a matter of fact, Washington, the framers talked about how parties are problematic because they're factions. And Washington's farewell address was very clear on what he felt and how he looked at factions. And as a matter of fact, what was interesting was that, there were really just two factions at that point in time, or what people perceived were two factions, the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. And most people don't realize that the Anti-Federalists moved over into the Federalist camp and actually became and took on, because what they wanted to do was they basically wanted to sit at the power. The Anti-Federalists, most of them were anti-central government. As a matter of fact, Patrick Henry was a leader of a cabal. If you look at each of the states, the Anti-Federalists were literally just state factions of people that did not want a national or centralized government, even as limited as the United States was in the Constitution. So they made a lot of, wild hyperbolic assertions, and they were proven wrong in the ratification debates. And so and I think what ended up happening is when Madison went in and actually created the Bill of Rights, he took the wind out of their sails in that very first year, because prior to him actually starting the Bill of Rights, New York and then Virginia had petitioned for a convention to amend the Constitution. And Madison used that as a fulcrum to get Congress to actually move forward on a Bill of Rights. And in so doing, he basically converted those anti-federalists into this new federal cabal of federalism. And those who were what we would call the federalists, who supported the limitations of Constitution and the limitations of the federal government, like Madison and so forth, they actually moved away from the big government federalists that started, you know, I would say, converting into this new government. And like Hamilton and so forth. Hamilton was already a Federalist, but some of the anti-Federalists joined up with the Hamilton and big government likes because they want power and they wanted control. And so shortly after Washington left, it was when the Kentucky Resolutions and Madison ended up creating the Republican Party with Jefferson to undo, or basically to counter, the big government federalists. And at that point, the anti-federalists were really non-existent. And so anyway, I don't mean to go down this path, but bottom line, when we look at parties are problematic. And what Madison and Jefferson, what they tried to do in the Republican Party was they tried to focus on the Constitution and recognizing that this is a limited government, this is all we can do, and that is it. And I think I remember reading the planks a long, long time ago of the party, the Republican Party. It was like, you know, less than 10 that, you know, this is all they stood for. And so I look at parties today and how they've evolved, and I appreciate your patience on this, but I've looked at parties and how they've evolved. And it seems like every single party has baked into it problems. It's one of the problems that I see is that not one party has bylaws that actually goes after any politician that misrepresents their name. In other words, they don't support the platform. In other words, it's a lot. Almost every party you see is a laissez-faire party. Now, I'm not saying that that's the case with the Independent American Party, but every party, the Libertarian, every party I look at, there is, you know, all the room in the world for these politicians who, you know, use their label to get elected, and then they go off in any direction that they want to go, like McCain and the rest of these folks. And so they don't protect
Carter.
Right. And they don't protect their brand. In other words, that, you know, you're wearing our brand, and they don't like remove that brand from them and kick them out of the party and all of that. And so there's all of these little problems that I see with all the parties. And I'm going, so if we want to end the party system, you have to create a party. So I agree that there has to be a party. But the party to end all parties has to actually take out the agenda and actually has to hold their candidates, or I should say their public servants, fully accountable, actually remove them from office if they violate their oath of office, if they violate, you know, what the party stands for. And if the party actually stands for the Constitution and only the constitutions, both at the state level and the federal constitutions, then I think we have a recipe of getting rid of the parties. Does that make sense?
Well, yes, and we didn't want to start a party, but we had to,
right,
if we were going to run candidates, because the state laws and state regulations put any candidate who is not a member of a recognized party at a horrible disadvantage.
Right. Okay.
And we're kind of the non-party party. That doesn't really sing.
Right. Okay. So when I tell my audience, because I do this all the time, that we've got to get rid of the parties. If you look at the Electoral College process, the Republican and Democratic Party had hijacked that process years and years ago, because nowhere in the Constitution does it say that the party gets to elect those electors. The electors are our representatives. They're who we're supposed to elect. We're supposed to vet out and understand that this person really knows what they're doing. But today, the party just basically says, okay, we're going to choose you as our state electors, and you're going to vote how we tell you.
That is correct. And that and the Electoral College is really quite a genius organization, but it has been, as you say, usurped.
Correct, correct. The parties usurped that a long, long time ago. And what I'd like to actually see is I'd love to see Republicans in some of these states actually change their laws so that it goes back to the representation of the people. I'd love to see that in Wyoming. I'd love to see that in, you know, these dark red states where they remove the party control over the Electoral College. It doesn't change anything else for any other seat, but it does remove the popular vote so that when the presidential election comes up, the people's names you do not see are not on that ballot. Right. You know, it is literally just the guy that lives in your legislative district, or actually congressional district, or Senate district. The Electoral College gives the state representatives the ability to make their senators at large, or they can split the state and say, okay, the east side gets this elector and the west side. That way, if you have a population center on one of the sides, then the population center can't control both votes, or, you know, both electors to determine the outcome, because the democracy part would overrule that. So, I mean, so the state legislatures had this ability to try to create better protections and better checks in how they were going to distribute the Electoral College. But the only authority they have is that, in how the manner of how we to choose them. You know, are we choosing all of them at large via democracy, or are we choosing them based on the legislative or congressional districts and the senators breaking them up? But that's it. They don't have and the process, like a ballot or an oral, because in the old days, the way the elections were done, it was done in the county seats, and people would go in, they would basically kind of sign a log, and then they would tell the sheriff how they voted. And the sheriff would write that down. And if the sheriff didn't know you and didn't know that you were a property owner, he wouldn't let you vote.
Interesting.
The sheriffs actually had some real skin in the game back in the very, very beginning of the electors and this process. And everybody was scratching their heads trying to figure out how to do it, but they followed the process for the first couple of years. Actually, a friend of mine, Keith Broders, I don't think you know him. You might know him. He knows a lot of people, but he teaches the Constitution. He used to live in California. Now he's in Florida, and he's done a lot of extensive research regarding the Electoral College. And for the most part, we followed the Electoral College for almost 50 years, or actually till about the 1830s. And then that's when states started changing into basically doing like a popular vote type of thing on, you know, how they would choose their electors and so forth. But the real popular vote of actually voting for the candidates didn't come in till a little bit later on in some of the states. But anywho, I digress. And forgive me for that. The whole point is, okay, so on your website, because I've been there, do you have these 15 points, and are those points a part of your platform today?
No, we have a separate platform, and we have the 15 points, and the 15 points do not change.
Okay.
They are what we stand for. And that's the first of the 15 points, and I'll read this for you, drives off the socialists, etc. We believe that no person can maintain freedom, no people can maintain freedom, unless their political institutions are founded upon faith in God and belief in the existence of moral law. Well, that drives a lot of people away from our party, and we're happy with that. We're not here to become another Democrat or Republican party. We're here to teach proper role of government, and the Republican, that Republican Party, that's they've usurped that name, but we're here to teach the government of a republic.
So if I could, I'm on your website, and I can't find the 15 points. Where would I find that? Just so my listeners can kind of go.
Oh, okay. Let's see. There's several drop-down menus.
Sure.
And I think the fourth from the left is...
Action Center?
No, is it Education?
Education Center. Okay, so Education Center is the third from the left. Okay.
Okay. Pull that down, and it is number one. Principles of good government.
The principles of liberty. Okay.
Liberty. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. And so
you'll find those, and we are at war in those 15 points with the government as it has been administered for the last 150 years.
Right. Okay. So actually, I think that war has raged on since Adam and Eve. Since Adam and Eve, right? Or maybe even before that. But anyway, because there's always been this civil war between liberty and subjugation. I mean, how long did it take before mankind invented slavery and violated the commandment that, thou shalt live by the sweat of thy brow?
Yeah.
Right? When you make somebody else sweat for you to survive, then you were no longer living by the sweat of your brow.
Agreed.
Okay.
Agreed. Yeah. I'm in my 85th year. And they say, well, when are you going to quit? And my answer is, I would rather wear out than rust out. And so I'm never going to quit.
Okay. So one of the things that so my perspective is that the way the framers created this Constitution, or should I dare I say, the way the Lord inspired the Constitution to be created, he made it possible that anybody that embraces individual liberty and individual sovereignty can partake as a citizen in this constitutional republic.
Well, the founders had terrific problems in coming up with the Constitution. And
yes.
The rumor has it, or is that Benjamin Franklin says, we haven't prayed. I'm paraphrasing his words.
Right. If a sparrow could, if the Lord can notice a sparrow fall from heaven, surely we can't lift this government up without him noticing. Why don't we pray and get his inspiration? I'm paraphrasing as well, but you're absolutely correct. And it was like 5 weeks into the convention when they started. And actually, I believe they had a priest come in to the convention because they first went down and prayed. And then I think every day they had a priest kick off the day with prayer.
Yeah. And just as they do in the Congress nowadays.
Yes.
And it may be a Mohammedan, but nevertheless.
Right.
Those founders at the close of the Constitutional Convention were amazed at what they had done, and they recognized the hand of the Lord and were. Through them.
Okay.
And it's the founders were very, very cognizant of the idea that this was an inspired document.
Right. And so you brought up a Mohammedan, and I believe that a Mohammedan cannot be a citizen in the United States because they do not believe that the individual can make their own choices, because their doctrine is that all people must be converted or they must be enslaved.
Well, that is true. And I think North Carolina came up with a state law that no believer in Sharia law could be a citizen. I agree with that.
Well,
because
Sharia
law is anti-constitutional, and therefore, to be an American citizen, you must observe and support the Constitution for the United States.
Well, even more than that. So the oath of a citizen, the first thing they have to do is they have to abjure and, you know, reject any former, you know, governor or sovereign,
yeah,
which means Mohammed. They basically, to become a U.S. citizen, they have to lie to actually maintain their beliefs in following Islam, because when you become a U.S. citizen, you can no longer follow that former sovereign and try to live those laws. So they're violating their oath of office. Does that make sense? Or not the oath of office, their oath of citizenship.
And that's one of the things. We have a mailing list of all of the state legislators. It's over 7,000, about 7,200 anyway. And we communicate with them on a regular basis, and when there's a state that comes up with a law or a bill, for
right,
that matter, which supports the 15 points of good government,
right,
then we send that bill to the other 49 states and say, for instance, New Mexico is doing this. You may want to follow them.
Right. And so I'm going to just ask you right now, I'd love to actually get a copy of that email list. I've already got 14 states, and I send out constitutional minutes, and maybe you'll trust me with that. But I've been having a problem trying to get, because I just don't have the time to go through and extrapolate that. So I don't know how you do that, but we can do that. We can talk about that on the side. I don't want to kind of talk about that at this point.
Well, you're right. It is a horrendous task.
Yes, it is.
And every 2 years we have to do it again.
Yep, that's right. Let me read the very first line of a oath of citizen. And to me, if you are a born citizen, the oath of citizenship is implied as a birthright. And so it says, I hereby declare on oath that I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity to any foreign prince, potent, state, or sovereignty of whom or which I have heretofore been a subject or citizen. Which means that because Islam is not just a religion, it is a government and citizen. You have a dual citizenship of a member of Islam religiously or spiritually and a citizen of the law of the land. And because
we have several Mohammedans, Muslims, whatever you may call them.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm old-fashioned. I call them Mohammedans.
That's correct. That's the best way to do it. Yep, Mohammedans. Yep.
And they should not be in our House of Representatives, because when they take that oath to the Constitution, they can't do that in good faith and still follow the Mohammedan or the Sharia law, which they do.
Right, right. Well, I believe that they can't be citizens, so that means that they can't even run for office. Now, the question...
Or vote.
Go ahead.
Or vote.
Or vote. That is correct. Well, no, so I do believe that there are some things that do apply to inhabitants, such as the property tax votes and those types of things. It's not like you're voting for representation. You're not entitled to representation unless you are a U.S. citizen. But you do have, as a potential property owner or as somebody that may be living in an area that could be impacted because of a tax burden or those types of things, I'm okay with the inhabitants that live in that area being able to vote on those issues. But I don't believe that if you're not a citizen, you can't vote. As a matter of fact, because I have this, and what we want to do is we want to propagate, and I don't want to go through it now, but I'll be happy to send it to you, and we can talk about it later. But I have a Bill of Rights for the 21st century, and within that is every election is local. In other words, you only have the right to influence the representation that you are entitled to. If you live in California and you have millions of dollars, you cannot influence any other representation in the United States other than your legislative district and congressional district and your Senate. That is it within your where you live. If you send money and or you get involved in trying to influence the representation anywhere else in the United States, that should be against the law. It should be against law because you're now trying to influence representation for people that you don't even live in that area. You have to be a resident to have the ability to influence representation. Does that make sense?
Well, that's interesting. I'd like to study that and think about that.
Right, because if you look at campaign finance, when people can shuffle money across state boundaries, across legislative district boundaries, across congressional district boundaries, then all of a sudden you can actually have a bad and the improper influence in getting people to no longer represent the people. Here's a good example. There is a Democrat, and I just talked about this last week in my radio show. There's a Democrat Arizona senator who has been very centrist because the state of Arizona is predominantly Republican. They do not want the Biden agenda. They do not want all of, you know, a lot of the things that the progressives. And so she happens to be one of the big obstacles. And, you know, she was an obstacle in getting rid of the 60 majority or the filibuster and some of those types of things so that Biden could force his agenda forward. And so she has done that, and she's being called out by the hardline leftists that are in Arizona saying, you do not represent us, when she's actually representing the people. And so I'm trying to show people, hey, if you live in Arizona and she's actually protecting you, you need to thank her because she's holding the line and representing you. Because she is representing the majority of the people in Arizona instead of those far radical leftists that helped her get elected. Does that make sense?
Yes, indeed it does.
And so what they're trying to do is they're trying to create this persona that she is, you know, she's the antithetical representative of the people because she's not supporting their agenda. This goes right back to the party and how the party, really, they are the problems because they have agendas. This is why when I look at platforms, and if you've got abortion within your platform, I say you have an agenda. Because bottom line, it has to be, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the national platform, state platform's different. You know, you can put whatever you want, but the national platform should be that the federal government has enumerated powers and they cannot exercise, spend a penny on anything that they do not have the enumerated powers to do. Period. So if it happens to be something that's not enumerated, it needs to cease and desist.
And that's about as simple as a platform should be, but that really puts it right into perspective so that you don't have to walk down this whole line of all of these moral checks and these ideological checks and everything else, because it's a compact. The federal government was granted powers by the states to only do these very specific things. That, at the end of the day, wins the argument, and it stops their ability to influence abortion, education, housing, labor, all of these things that they have no constitutional authority to do. Does that make sense?
That makes sense, and it is my fond wish that, apparently there is a movement in the United States to go back to the constitutional government, and they say that the government of the United States would be approximately 10% of what it is now, and that I'm very interested in supporting and seeing that happen before I depart this life.
Yeah, and 10%, it may be less than that, but who knows? It may be more than that. So this is where, you know, and this is where the states really need to step in, and they need to decide what, you know, clearly the federal government has the need for national security to have intelligence agencies. But the states, because of the nature of national security, the states have always been kept at bay, and in so doing, this is how Bush was able, and this is how for years and years the intelligence agencies really created these self-licking ice cream cones, or these what I'll call these stove, or what do they call them, chimneys, where they, you know, kind of coexist in their own little world, you know, as far as the different disciplines. They don't cross communicate. But the real problem, and I'll just use Snowden as an example because most people have heard me talk about this. When Snowden had evidence that the federal government was violating the Constitution on the contract he was working, instead of taking a whole bunch of data and giving it to our enemies, what he should have done and what he should have been able to do is go into a state house, into a state legislative body, and the states need to have SCIFs. Sensitive compartmented information facilities, where they're all connected so that when somebody wants to blow the whistle on the intelligence community, it goes into the right secure chambers so that not everybody finds out about it, but every state legislator that has been briefed and in, if you want to call it, indoctrinated into that discipline, then they all come in and they all at the same time. Every state house. So when he starts putting this data and laying this data out, it actually gets automatically disseminated to all 50 states. This way, every state now has the eyes on what the federal government is doing, and they can actually all instantly stand up and say, federal government, you cease and desist collecting all this data. You have no right to do this. This way, it doesn't go out into the world exposing sources, exposing people, resources, those types of things, where people get killed or our capabilities get compromised. But it puts the states back in charge of the federal government in every capacity, because that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to have oversight over the federal government. Does that make
sense? Let me read.
Go ahead.
To the 50 states.
Sure.
It's called the Control of Our Land Act. And we did this about four or five years ago.
Okay.
This bill sets up a state agency to take over all Bureau of Land Management responsibilities in this state. This bill nullifies all Bureau of Land Management regulations. This bill was adapted from an Indiana bill, which nullified all Environmental Protection Agency regulations in that state.
Okay.
Well, I read that bill, and I thought, well, if they can nullify and get rid of the Environmental Protection Agency, there is really no unconstitutional organization from the federal government that this wouldn't handle. And so we... we adapted that and used the BLM because in the West, BLM is our boss most of the time. This idea behind this bill can be applied to almost any federal agency in your state. And so that's the type of thing we do on an educational basis.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so technically, and I'm not sure, because I could easily go down the rat hole on nullification. Madison and Jefferson were really vehemently against this concept of nullification, where single states do it. What they were trying to do that kind of got lost in this whole banter of nullification, what they were really trying to do was they were trying to do interposition in forcing the federal government into compliance. But that was completely missed by everybody that I've ever read a book on that talks about nullification. They don't understand I guess they didn't understand interposition, or they didn't take the time to read how Madison laid it out in his report on the Virginia resolutions, as well as his notes on nullification of 1834. But let me ask you this. With the current independent American Party, is there a relationship? Because I have found that there seems to be kind of a relationship between the independent American Party, because your birthday is very close to the Constitution Party. Is there this relationship between the two, or understanding, cohabitating, anything like that?
No, not even a separation of a marriage.
Oh, okay, okay.
Unfortunately, we are, in the Independent American Party, we are against the spirit of party, because the spirit of party infects the Republicans, the Democrats, and most of the minor parties. When there is a good person that has a good track record running for office, we will not run someone in that office unless it happens by mistake. So we can support whichever good candidates that we can find wherever we find them. We don't normally find them in the Socialist Workers Party.
Right.
However, in the Constitution Party, some Republicans, a few Democrats. For instance, that Democrat that I supported in the 60s in Nevada was an excellent member of the House. And he was just doing a great job. And the Republicans would run someone against him, and the people supported. Let me see, what was his name? Oh, heavens. Anyway, that's a long time ago.
Okay. Well, so let me do this, because I've noticed that we've kind of meandered for a while, and what I want to do is I'd like to get back into my perceptions of these different alternative parties and what the likelihood is of getting people to unite. And so with that, folks, we are going to be back. By the way, Will Christensen, he's a former Marine, which means he's in good company here. And folks,
no, not former. I am a Marine.
I am a Marine. There we go. If I get tongue-tied, but he used to don the uniform, but he still is a Marine. Anyway,
that is correct.
Folks, we will be back with more with Will Christensen and the Independent Party in our next episode. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, just like at the very beginning, my intro, I only have a couple minutes here. Actually, literally, just a couple minutes. And so, as you can tell, we are looking at an alternate party other than the Republican Party that actually stands on constitutional principles. Now, I will say this, that I think because of our illiteracy regarding the Constitution, it is obvious that people are absolutely clueless. They know something's wrong, but they don't know how and why. And this is why we need to actually help people understand. And the best way to do that is start leading on the Constitution, because they're going to have all sorts of questions. And as they ask, well, why did you have a vice president and a president ticket? Why do you have seven nominees for president for your party instead of like everybody else and have a primary? Because the primary and what everybody else is doing is not within the Constitution. And that's how you start teaching people what's in the Constitution and what isn't in the Constitution. You have to challenge them, and you have to actually take them outside the, you know, this comfort zone that they have, and, you know, the government doing everything, when we start realizing that they can't do everything. The fact is that they're supposed to do certain things, like stop this invasion. It's not an immigration crisis, and that we can't allow them to keep mislabeling things. So they can do that because it's immigration, right? No, this, when you're talking about a million people, political combatants coming here and trying to gain access into our privileges, our immunities, and into our political system, these are political combatants, period. And we got well over 20 million of them. We're getting that petition for you. Hope to have that done by the end of the week. But when we come back tomorrow, we will have the second part of this interview with Will Christensen. And actually, these aren't really an interview. This is just a dialogue I have to kind of understand, you know, what these alternate parties are talking about, because Will didn't really know, and he doesn't know, you know, where I'm coming from, because who does? And it's the same thing with, you know, understanding the basics regarding the independent American Party, just like the Constitution Party and so forth. I honestly see these two parties should be able to shed and unify, you know, some of their differences and unify on the Constitution. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am
trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.